Anyway, as we get to the end of the day, our next speaker is going to cover burnout in open source, particularly burnout as a systems issue and what we can actually change. Please welcome Miranda Heath.
Thanks so much. Can you hear me okay? Is the microphone good? Great. How's everyone's energy? It's second to last talk. It's really warm in here. Give me a shout. That's okay. Okay, I want to ask if this sounds familiar to anyone. My open source success went from a major blessing to a great curse. It was one of the darkest times of my life. Something that started out with such hope and such light ended up being about just getting thousands of emails. So these words, the words of Mark Grabansky of Front End Masters, speak to the issue of burnout in open source software. I'm Miranda Heath. I study the psychology and the philosophy of altruism, so I'm not a programmer. And I've been researching what's been causing open source developers to burn out. So what does psychology tell us about burnout? Burnout is a work-related exhaustion of both our physical and our mental energy. And it affects us in three different ways. It affects, firstly, our motivation. So we're fatigued. We can't force ourselves to exert effort. Our work becomes lower quality, and it's a really big predictor of quitting. It affects our cognition, so it affects our thought processes. We might start thinking about things in a more cynical or a negative way. It affects our self-worth and our self-esteem. We can become obsessive over issues at work and unable to drop them. We can also feel like we've lost our sense of direction, both in work and our sense of meaning in what we're doing in our life generally. And we might also indulge in dark humor and escapism. And in the worst cases, this can even lead to behavior like addiction. And finally, it affects our emotions. So burnout makes us feel drained emotionally. It also makes it harder for us to regulate our own emotions. So we might be quick to overreact or to anger or to panic. And it makes it harder to deal with emotions in other people as well. We have like compassion fatigue. And these two factors can make it hard to, it can affect your relationships outside of work and inside work as well. So it can affect your life in a broader way. We also might feel guilty or experience depression. In fact, mental and physical health really suffer with burnout. So if you're wondering why we should care about burnout in open source, I hope you can see that it's putting developers at risk of real harm, and it's an ethical issue. Now, there are some things that drain our energy. So things like having a high workload, really complicated work, an awful lot of responsibility, having unclear expectations, what our role is supposed to be, conflict with our colleagues, or feeling like we're being treated unfairly at work. And some of these you might recognize from working in open source. And there are some things that sustain our energy, so things like having good social support, having opportunities to grow and develop and learn new things, fair pay, autonomy, so having freedom and control over what you're working on and how, having joy and meaning in the work you do and feeling competent at it. Now, burnout is caused by an imbalance in the things that drain us and the things that sustain us. So it's also an issue of fairness and of justice. Now, burnout in open source is also a significant problem. So 73% of software developers in open and closed source worldwide have experienced burnout at some point in their career. In fact, I wonder how many people in the room, put your hand up if you feel like you've experienced burnout while working in open source. Oh my goodness, that's worse than I thought. That's more than 72%. 60% of over 400 open source developers considered quitting open source in 2024. And there have been at least four globally significant security incidents where burnout has played a role. So burnout in open source is also an issue of sustainability, the dreaded word, and security. Now, I wanted to better understand what it is about open source in particular that's putting people at risk of burnout. And I wanted to understand this in developers' own words. So I analyzed more than 50 articles, blog posts, podcasts, videos, and online discussions on burnout by people working in and around open source software. You'll hear their quotes throughout this talk. I also spoke to 8 developers. I sought feedback from the community, and then I wrote it all together into a report on the causes and possible solutions to burnout in open source software. So what are these causes? What is it about working in open source that makes it drain more than it sustains? Well, firstly, it's difficult to get paid. So many developers felt it's unrealistic to expect sufficient and reliable payment for the work that they do. This is also backed up by the numbers. So according to research by the Sovereign Tech Agency and by Tidelift, about 60% of open source developers don't receive any payment at all for their open source. And a further 16% of them are paid, but it's not enough for them to earn a living. Now, if we feel like we're being treated unfairly, then this is likely to lead to burnout. And developers feel like that they're being unfairly exploited, that they're being pressured into free labor for an industry that could actually afford to pay them. In the words of David L. McIver, we've concluded that we'd much rather make people work for free in their spare time to produce adequate software and then shame them into supporting it than fairly compensate them for their labor and get good software out of it. Another thing that makes open source draining is the workload and the time that it takes. The high workloads are also associated with burnout. And developers described open source work as kind of like a stealth shift. So because it starts out as a hobby, you might not recognize that it's also work. But a labor of love is a labor nonetheless, especially once it becomes more popular and there's more work to be done. And because it's hard to get paid, many developers also have full-time jobs alongside their open source, effectively doing this double shift and incredibly long hours in order to be able to make a living while doing their open source work. In the words of Jacob Kaplan-Moss, I wasn't getting paid to do the work I felt like I had to do, and I had to do the work that I was getting paid to do because of mortgages and bills and car payments. Now, on top of that, developers are increasingly overloaded with issues and requests and bug reports, and this is often a problem when they're particularly low effort, because low effort reports mean that it takes a higher effort in order to review them, and this leaves developers feeling like their time is worth less than other people's. And remember, this feeling of unfairness is also associated with burnout. This is also seen to be getting worse with the rise of AI coding, as AI lowers the effort required to make a pull request, leading to a greater volume of requests and of a worse quality than if they were written by a human who understands the code base. The more time we spend working, the less time we have for our friends, our family, for relationships, or for interests outside of work. And the psychology literature tells us that both loneliness and having work as the only meaningful thing in your life is likely to lead to burnout. Developers are being left making really painful existential choices. As Nolan Lawson puts it, I just can't see how I'll be able to make the time for both raising a family and doing open source. Another cause of burnout, all of that maintenance work that developers are doing isn't always rewarding to do. So in psychology, we tend to distinguish between two types of reward: intrinsic reward, which are things that we do for their own sake, for the joy of it, and then extrinsic reward, which are things we do for some external good, like money, recognition, job prospects. As we've seen, maintenance is not sufficiently extrinsically rewarded. So developers are rarely paid, they're rarely recognized or thanked for doing maintenance in a market society that favors extraction rather than sustaining things. And developers don't always find maintenance intrinsically rewarding either. So doing triage, code review, managing people's expectations is not the kind of creative expression or intellectual challenge that got a lot of us involved in coding in the first place. And this is also being exacerbated by the rise of AI coding, because in some cases it feels like we have intentionless machines doing the creative part of writing code, and then people end up doing the machine-like work of looking for hard-to-spot errors in this deceptively competent-looking code. And if we want work to be intrinsically motivating, this is totally the wrong way around. And pushing ourselves to do work that's neither extrinsically nor intrinsically rewarding, it drains our energy and puts us at risk of burnout. And T-Rez sums this up well. I would rather be remembered as a bad artist than a good programmer, but now I'm asked more and more to express myself less and to maintain the project more. Now, a big cause of burnout that came up in the research I was doing was that the community can be toxic. I don't know what the overlap is between open source developers and Britney fans, but there she is. I talked about social pressure earlier. So people act entitled to developers' time, and they demand their help for features and for fixes, and sometimes resort to anger or insults or shaming when their needs aren't met, even if it's for a really specific use case that's not generally helpful. And developers also experience rudeness from other collaborators, or sometimes describe becoming rude themselves. And remember, when we're burnt out, our emotion regulation is worse, and we feel worthless, we have low self-esteem. So it's easier to lash out if we're stretched thin and trying to defend the very last bit of our ego. And the fact that a lot of this toxic behavior happens in public is particularly bad for burnout. It can make us feel powerless or humiliated or feed into those feelings of guilt and inadequacy, which makes it a lot worse. All of this makes it very hard to want to carry on doing maintenance work. As Jamie Kyle puts it, every single day I'm reading someone else rant about how awful of a job we're doing. It's been hard to stay motivated. I've practically stopped looking at issues and at pull requests. Now, community toxicity can lead to what I've delicately called the burnout death spiral. So when communities are toxic, maintainers are more likely to burn out. That's harder to regulate their emotions, and they're more likely to get into conflict. And technologies with toxic communities are seen as riskier investments, which might mean that businesses and governments are less likely to want to get involved in investing in open source, which makes it harder to get paid. And then issues where people are rude to each other have been shown to take longer to solve, and rudeness in a community deters newcomers from getting involved, all of which contributes to having a greater workload. And the more conflict there is, the harder it is to get paid, the greater the workload, the more likely we are to burn out, and then the more likely we are to engage in toxic behavior, and so the spiral goes on and on. Now, finally, developers are carrying a tremendous amount of responsibility. So the majority work either alone or in small teams. This is research from the Sovereign Tech Agency. And many of them also feel irreplaceable. So they feel like, if I stop doing this, if I don't keep doing it, who will? And when we have too much responsibility, and when we feel like we can't be replaced, we're less likely to recognize when we need to slow down, and we're much more likely to burn out. There are three sources of responsibility in particular that we're weighing on developers. So firstly, responsibility towards the project, the people, the packages that depend on it. So caring about it, that it's being good quality, it continues to be usable, it continues to exist at all. And then there is responsibility towards other collaborators on the project or employees. And then responsibility towards the open source community and to uphold open source values. And these can come into conflict. Let me illustrate this with an example. So who's been following what happened at Tailwind CSS? Give me a nod. A few people. So in what I thought was a really admirably candid recording, the creator, Adam Wathan, described how revenues were down, so he had to lay off 70% of his staff. He explained how he wasn't going to implement a request that would make documentation easier for LLMs to read, because the documentation helps Tailwind sell premium features, which would help keep the revenue streams up. And in response to this post, some people got angry with him and said he was betraying open source values or just being in it for the money. Now, this was a lose-lose situation. It's not possible to juggle these competing responsibilities. Yet this podcast culminates in him saying that he feels personally like a failure and like a fucking idiot for making something that's so popular but not being able to figure out how to make enough money to keep people working on it. And this made me think of this art installation. I thought about not putting this in because it makes me want to cry every time. So it's this robot that slowly leaks this blood-like hydraulic fluid, and it's programmed when too much of it leaks out to stop and scoop it back in. And at first it can stay on top of the scooping, and it uses its downtime to do little happy arm-waving dances. But the more it leaks out, the more time it spends scooping, the less time it spends doing its happy dancing, until eventually it's all bled out and switched off completely. And I can really see parallels between this and some of the developers that I've researched descriptions of what it can feel like working in open source software. So congratulations, we've made it to the low point of my talk. So now I'm going to try and let a little bit of light and optimism in. So the open source community excels at recognizing the importance of collaboration, that the value of your work can't be attributed to you and you alone, and that we can do better things if we work together out in the open. But it's not so good at applying this same logic to burnout. So individuals are being left to make these impossible sacrifices to keep working in open source. And individuals are left trying to cope with conditions that, according to psychology, really create the perfect storm for burnout. Now, burnout already affects our self-worth. And if the only fixes available to burnout are individual fixes, then there's a risk that people will, like Adam, feel like they failed personally when things fall apart. And I don't know about you, but I don't feel like that's an individual burden for us to bear. So in order to solve burnout for good, we need system-level fixes. And system-level fixes require us to do what open source does best and to collaborate. So before we wrap up, I'm going to argue for three such system fixes. And I'm going to argue against the position that we should keep treating burnout as an individual issue only. and then highlight some things that are important to consider from the perspective of psychology if you're someone who's working on implementing them. So firstly, we've made it a bit taboo to talk about money in this room. I'm going to say that we need to make it easier to get paid. So the fact that developers aren't getting paid is making everything else worse. It's making the workload greater, it's making maintenance less rewarding extrinsically, and it's leaving individuals juggling impossible competing responsibilities. I've heard people say at this conference that open source isn't about money, it's about people. But I don't think there's a dichotomy here. I think that if we're leaving people struggling to cope, to make a living, just because they've decided to work to maintain the commons, then that's not respecting the people of open source. And now, if we approach burnout as an individual issue, it might be tempting to say, well, didn't you sign up for this when you made your code open source? Why do you feel like you're being treated unfairly? But I don't think this is true. I think that psychology tells us that social behavior is organized by group norms, which are kind of like unwritten rules for the group. And it's a norm in the open source community that, yes, we give away code for free, but in return, you expect the community to collaborate, and then everyone shares in the benefits when you produce something good. So it starts with developers sharing code with other developers. But then when your open source becomes more popular, more people outside the group come to depend on it. And this also creates more work, and these people who are further from the middle of the group don't always abide by those group norms. And these aren't the terms that a lot of developers signed up for when they made their code available open source. Plus, while making money is a taboo topic in open source, I think leaving individuals on their own to figure out how to make a living while doing open source is arguably putting open source values at greater risk. So individual developers don't have much power to make a living out of their open source beyond restricting access to parts of it or making freemium features, which limits the possibilities for open collaboration. But if we work together, we don't need to sacrifice those open source values. So together we have the influence to encourage, for example, companies that rely on open source to subscribe to those group norms and to give something back to maintainers. Now, I did this research along with Sentry's open source pledge team, and I think this is a great example of trying to get companies to give something back to the community. So companies can become members if they pledge at least $2,000 per year per developer at the company. And this aligns with what psychological research tells us about the organizing power of group norms. So encouraging companies to make their commitment to open source norms public makes them accountable to the group, so they're more likely to stick to them. And in turn, these companies are then recognized and celebrated by the community for the part they're playing in it. And they've raised over $3 million for maintainers in the last year alone. In fact, I have to keep updating this slide because I look on the website and it's snuck up since last time. Secondly, we need to share the responsibilities associated with open source software. So I think it might be tempting to apply this individual fix of learning to say no to taking on more responsibility than you can cope with. And this is really important. We should know how to draw boundaries. There are some things that we're pressured to doing that we should feel no qualms about saying no to. But I think we also need more people who are willing and able to share in the responsibilities that can't be avoided. So we need to be able to grow the maintenance community. Now, we sometimes talk about this in terms of the bus factor. I don't know if there's overlap between the Mean Girls fan community and open source developers, but there it is. But I have a word of caution about the bus factor, which we use to talk about how to increase the number of people working on a project so that it's less likely to fail if someone hypothetically gets hit by a bus. The bus factor treats developers as if they're interchangeable, which misses out on important qualitative information about those individuals and about team dynamics. So the team might have many people who have the skills to step up, but one person still ends up doing all of the work because they're the expert, they're the senior, it's the path of least resistance to leave it to them. Or they might have difficulty trusting junior people to step up. And these individuals are at risk of burnout. So what's the solution? We've talked a lot in this room today in a really good way about mentoring relationships. So these help collaborators build the confidence that they need to contribute and help senior developers build the trust that they need to pass on the reins. And secondly, larger projects could benefit from governance that makes everyone's roles and responsibilities clear. So unclear expectations lead to a diffusion of responsibility, and they are themselves associated with burnout. But this is also something of a balancing act. We don't want roles and responsibilities to be too rigid either, because remember that autonomy, so freedom and control over how we work, protects us against burnout. So here's a really useful thing from the psychology literature to bear in mind. When work has hardly any autonomy and lots of responsibility, Or it has lots of autonomy with little responsibility, so the pink danger zones in this graph here, then there's a risk of burnout. Open source maintenance just is a big responsibility, so we need to balance it out by making sure we preserve autonomy. We want to be here. So if you're working on models of governance, or if you're working on different models for funding, then it's important to make sure the model you're working on doesn't prevent developers from having freedom and control over how they work. And I think this is a risk if you have a model that's like a BDFL, or if you're too reliant on one source of funding so they have power over the direction of the project. And finally, so I'm getting close to running out of time, we need a kinder community dynamic. And I think this will get better, the more better paid and the less overworked developers are, remembering the burnout spiral. However, I think there's still an underlying culture in open source that's permissive of rudeness in public under the guise of frank and open dialogue. If we take an individual approach to this problem, we might say, well, you need to develop thick skin in order to work in open source. You need to be resilient. And I think this is important, but also it's somewhat fatalistic because it's asking us to adapt rather than believing that change is possible. And secondly, I think this would mean asking some people to develop thicker skin than others, because groups that are already marginalized in open source are already bearing the brunt of more of this toxic community behavior. So I don't think this way of thinking encourages diverse participation in open source. Oops, sorry, I should have clicked on those earlier. So a less individualist solution would be one where we build a sense of community that helps us feel solidarity with one another, and where we respect each other rather than disrespecting each other because we've become used to being treated with disrespect. This is an easy thing to say, a harder thing to do, but psychology tells us that there's a role that community leaders can play in this. So if you're someone people in the community look up to, you can model the sort of behavior that you'd like to see in open source. So you could be like Adam Wathan and be courageous and candid about your experiences, talk about your feelings. Well, secondly, it's important to have kind of grassroots community spaces where people can come together and talk about the problems in open source. So, oh dear. I'm going to go over by like 1 minute if that's okay, just so I can finish up. Thanks. So this gives us a greater opportunity to build a sense of community and build solidarity with each other rather than fighting because we're all suffering from a lack of funding and burnout. And to sum up, we should care about burnout because it's an ethical issue, an issue of fairness and justice, and an issue of sustainability and security. Open source culture is built on recognizing the value of collaboration, and there are many actions we can take that will actually get to the root causes of burnout that can only be achieved by us working together. So thinking back to that leaky robot, we need to stop leaving individuals to try and cope as all the energy drains out of them, and we need to get back to whatever our equivalent of happy waving dancing is, so get back to that creative coding that gives us life. Thank you so much for listening. Quickly before we go to the Q&A, because this has sort of been a call to action, I've started making a list of people working on system fixes to burnout in open source. That's the top QR code here. So please take a look. Tell me if there's anything I should add and see if you can help any of these people out. And secondly, this was just a bit of research I did in my own free time alongside my PhD, and I'd love to be able to expand it. So if you'd like to talk to me about your experiences of burnout, or if you'd like to collaborate with me on similar work in the future, or if you know someone who's willing to fund this kind of research, you can come talk to me at my website. The list QR here. Thank you so much.
We might have time for one question. Does anyone have a question for Miranda? Okay,
please. Thank you, Miranda. It's a really important subject to address. I think it even applies to people who work commercially in software as well. One thing you talked about responsibility, that's really important, but people are made differently and you can't turn people into what they aren't. I wonder if there's a specific role in communities for, if you like, the salesperson, the marketing person. Just like in my company, if my engineers get beaten up, they come to me because I can put on my salesman hat and beat the customer back up again. And there are people who are good at that, and whether you need that, or that's the sort of champion you need, someone who's not just setting a role model, but is actively keeping people off other people's backs who aren't so good at that stuff.
No, I do think that would be incredibly useful, and I don't think everyone who is involved in maintenance has those kind of skills or finds that something that's easy to do or that they enjoy doing. So somehow, if we could bring in more people who are good at that people management side of open source, even if they're not so strong on the coding, like bringing in people who aren't just programmers to help out, which we had a little bit of talking about at the end of the talk, I think that would be really helpful. I agree. I think that's what I meant by like being careful not to treat programmers as interchangeable, like we all have the same kind of skill set or find the same things motivating, because that just isn't true.
Right, thank you, Miranda.